I spoke a bit about being a Christian employee, and today it's very much about being a Christian manager. And I want to put it in the context of managing or leading in terms of either in paid employment, that could be leading an organization, which actually may mean that you don't actually lead anybody, but you're responsible for somebody, or in a voluntary capacity, or in church, where actually we lead people because actually we have to make decisions and we have to provide direction. A man in a hot air balloon realized he was lost. He reduced altitude and spotted a woman below him. He descended a bit more and shouted, "Excuse me, can you help me? I promised a friend I'd meet him about an hour ago, but I don't know where I am." The woman below said, "You're in a hot air balloon hovering approximately 30 feet above the ground. You're between 40 and 41 degrees north latitude, between 59 and 60 degrees west longitude. You must be an engineer," the balloonist said. "I am," replied the woman. "How did you know?" "Well," replied the balloonist, "everything you told me is technically correct, but I have no idea what to make of the information you've given me, and the fact is I'm completely lost. Frankly, you've not been much help. If anything, you have delayed my trip." The woman replied and responded, "Ah, well, you must be a manager." And he said, "Yes, I am. But how did you know?" "Well," said the woman, "you don't know where you're going to. You don't know where you've come from. And you've risen because of a large quantity of hot air. You've made a promise which you have no idea how to keep, and you expect the people beneath you to solve your problems. The fact is, you are in entirely the same position as you were before we met, but somehow it's my fault." Now, that's a parody around what is management like, and a little bit about what engineers are like. But anyway, more focusing on what a manager is like. And today, that's what we're going to be spending some time looking at. What is a manager? And how does that work for us? And what should we be like as Christian managers? The role of the manager is a very challenging one. Over the past 5 years, it has got a lot tougher. The recession has hit hard. Organizations have made cost savings, often by cutting staff numbers, but still demanding that the output remains exactly the same. This challenge is given to a lot of managers on a regular basis. In short, they're asked to provide and perform the 5 loaves and 2 fishes miracles on a regular basis, i.e. creating something out of nothing. It has been a tough time because actually the managers are often borne the brunt, working long hours, making difficult decisions. And the challenges on the screen are just some of the issues that managers and business leaders and people who lead people in organizations have had to face every day. And it doesn't really matter whether you are a volunteer manager or whether you get paid. We actually feel that all of these things put us under a huge amount of pressure. So how do we as Christians manage people? Or should we actually not bother with management? Should we focus on the higher things in life? Should we think, well, actually, that's very worldly? Let's focus on sort of more giving in church and serving that way and not as a manager in the world of work. But what does the Bible say? Well, I think that actually it's very important for us to actually see what the Bible says. And also, being involved in business is incredibly important for us as managers. For us as Christians, sorry. Can I have the next one, Tony? Thank you. And actually, being influential in our sphere is very, very important. These are three people who are all committed Christians and have all made a difference in one way or another. The first one, John Rockefeller, prolific businessman in the US, started the oil industry, really, and his Christian faith drove him. Rockefeller would read the Bible daily, attend prayer meetings twice a week, and led his own Bible study with his wife. And actually, as his personal fortune grew, so did his giving. He gave away the equivalent, they reckon, across his life, he gave away the equivalent of $550 million. And a lot of those causes were to found churches and schools and missionaries. They reckon he was one of the richest men ever. Second one, John Cambry, a Quaker, who took his faith as a commitment to actually what he did. So the whole, every time you eat a chocolate bar, remember the basis of it was a Christian organization. And Cadbury and his brother were driven by the idea that they actually wanted equality, and they had objections to slavery and alcoholism and war. And actually out of it came incredibly good conditions for their workers. They were so far ahead of their time. If you've ever been to Bourneville, he built that village for his people, including a church in the middle of it. And his Christian faith was front and central for all to see. The final one is Ken Costa, who was chairman of the investment bank Lazard's. He rose to fame in that. He's also chair of Alpha International and has raised a lot of money for charities and raising the profile of Christians in the workplace. His ethical credentials are beyond reproach. And people in that industry, the finance industry, he is the go-to person when they want to talk about ethics, because they know he's a Christian and he's made a massive impact. These are three individuals who've actually lived out their Christian life, and there are loads more, and made a massive difference. But were they being biblical? Is management in the Bible? Well, I think it is. We had read for us earlier, which is coming up next, is we had read for us earlier the passage where Jethro advised Moses how to be a manager. Moses was spending all his time doing stuff. And Jethro said, no, don't do that. Get people to do it for you. Organize it, and you manage them. Next day, Moses sat as a judge for the people while the people stood around from morning till evening. And then Moses' father-in-law saw him, what he was doing, and said, what is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone when the people stand around you from morning to evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire from God. Moses took it all on himself and he said, don't do that. Give it away. Let other people be involved. We also see management in Acts 6, where the apostles were really busy both preaching God's word, but actually waiting on table and sorting out lots of the practical stuff. And they decided to set up they would actually focus on that, and they had people underneath them who were there to actually wait on table and make sure all the practical stuff happened. The order of the priests and the bishops and deacons. And also within Proverbs. Proverbs is full of wisdom. Have a read of Proverbs. Proverbs has got a lot of very good, clear business wisdom. And in fact, you'll find a few of them actually in quite a lot of management textbooks, because it's perceived wisdom of this makes sense. So is management found in the Bible? Yes. Very clearly, it is in the Bible. The big question we've got is, how can we be better managers? So let's focus on the passage that we had read earlier, which is Ephesians 6. So if you've got a Bible and you want to turn to it, that's great. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, in singleness of heart as you obey Christ. Not even while you're being watched, but in order to please them, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Render service with enthusiasm as to the Lord and not to men and women, knowing that whatever good we do, we receive the same again from the Lord, whenever we are slaves or free. Then masters do the same. Stop threatening them, for you know that both of you have the same master in heaven, and in him there is no partiality. I spoke on half this passage last week, And I said that actually I think we can make this legitimate linkage between the slaves and employees, that actually that's what Paul is talking about. And here, the masters, or the people who actually sort of control the slaves, that is almost word to the managers as well. So we're going to be looking at the same passage. And the first thing I want to pick up on is the same rules apply for the workers as they do for the managers. Have a look, have a look what it says. It says that we should, you know, it's about do the same. Masters, verse 9 tells us, masters do the same to them. So actually it's saying, all the things I've said about the slaves, we should do that, and I'm going to add something else on top. But also I think there's a bit more of an application here, because it's all in the application. So let's look at the first one. Verse 5, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling in singleness of heart as you obey Christ. Excuse me. As managers, one of the key things I think this passage is telling us is that we need to be obedient to the organizations for whom we work for, we serve, and that we choose to volunteer for. We have to, what it means is backing policies and decisions, even when we don't like them. When there is decisions which have made, we need to say, I am going to obediently follow. Instead of running things down publicly or with people you manage, we say, this is the policy, this is what we're doing. When I speak in work settings, I actually say to managers, as soon as you say the management or the organization or the vicar says this, then you're actually saying, I don't agree with this at all. And as a manager, it says here, we are to obey. Obey your earthly masters with singleness of heart as you obey Christ. So the first thing is, we need to be obedient. When we are actually put in a position of authority and responsibility, we have to back what the organization does. If we find that's a massive conflict for us, then we possibly have to consider the organizations we work for, which is a bigger question. But we have to obey. The second thing is, verse 6, as you obey Christ, not only while being watched in order to please them, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart and render with enthusiasm. We need to be self-motivated. If you're not motivated as the person who's leading it, your staff, the people who follow you, the people who work for you, they're certainly not going to be motivated. If you don't show people that you are enthusiastic about it, then people won't buy into this. It rubs off. We set the tone. What is our motivator? Our motivator is the fact that we want to show Christ in the place of work that we are there. And so actually, we are to be enthusiastic, render our service with enthusiasm, even when it's a dull job. I said last week, and somebody said actually they have a job where they love everything about their job, and I said, well, you're really lucky. I think there's not many of us who can put a hand out and say, oh, I love every part of my job, including the tedious admin that I have to do sometimes. And actually, we have to do it with enthusiasm. We have to do it with passion. And remember, as a manager, you're always being watched. You're always being watched. And you're always being judged. Which leads you on to the next point. You're a very visible witness. Verse 7 and 8. Render the service with enthusiasm to the Lord and not to men or women, knowing that whatever good we do, we will receive the same. We are watched in everything we do. And as managers, we have to realize that. We are seen about the good things that we do and the good things we say, but also what is bad about you as well. And unlike normal staff, because people do talk about staff, but when you're in a leadership position and the higher up a leader you become, actually more than just your staff will talk about the things and decisions, the things you do. I've worked with a number of people who profess faith. However, their actions at work as a manager would not give that away. They take long lunch breaks, but then give their staff a hard time for the fact that they're not in back on time. They're very happy to bend the rules as far as they're concerned, but are very key, very, very hard on their own people to make sure they obey. Also, how we treat people is important here. About how we manage good and bad performance. I like what Mark said, and I didn't know what he was going to say. And when he said it, I was really pleased. Because being a Christian manager doesn't mean that you're actually a complete pushover. It says that we are to offer this service to Christ. And if you've got somebody who's not performing, you have to make the difficult decision sometimes, which includes letting them go. As soon as you said it, I thought, I bet you somebody said, and you thought you were a Christian. Because we tend to think that's not Christian. Because if we're Christian, we'll forgive everybody. That's fine, but we're working for an organization. We have to be obedient to them. And if the obedience means that somebody is not performing, then we have to follow policy. We have to do what we have to do, however painful that is. One of the hardest things you'll ever have to do is to sack somebody. I've only ever had to do it once. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like it. But it had to be done. But actually, the way that you do it is really important. Because you are being watched. And it's about being fair. And also, as managers, that's the next point. Be fair to your staff. Verse 9. Managers, do the same. Stop threatening them, for you know that both have the same master in heaven. There is no partiality. Do not threaten. Do not cajole. Do not bully your people. That includes using sarcasm as a way of actually critiquing their performance. Not everybody gets it. And as a manager, we should be fair. We should judge people on their performance and not on whether we like them or not. As a Christian manager at work, we shouldn't have favorites. It says here, masters, stop threatening them, for you know you have the same master in heaven. And threat isn't just the fact that I threaten you with your job. Threat is the fact that actually I have a power and I have connections and I can make your life very difficult. And as a Christian, we have to be fair. We have to make sure that we are not bullying. We are not controlling. We are being fair. This is expanded upon in 1 Peter. 1 Peter 5. If you've got a Bible, you want to turn to it. If not, it comes up on the screen. And in 1 Peter here, Peter's talking, actually, he's talking to elders within a church. But I actually think some of the things that he says are as relevant to us as managers and leaders as it is elders in a church. Now, as an elder myself and a witness of the suffering of Christ, as well as those who share in the glory to be revealed, I exhort the elders amongst you to tend to the flock that is in your charge. Exercise oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you do it. Not for sordid gain, but eagerly. Do not lord it over those in your charge, but be examples to the flock. This is what management and leadership should look like. This is what we should do. The two things I think come out of this is, what are your motives for managing and dealing with people at work or in a voluntary setting? Verse 2 of that verse says that we should actually exercise oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you do it. Not from sordid gain, but eagerness. Don't be a manager because it pays you more. Don't be a manager because it actually moves you up the next ladder. Be a manager because that's what God has asked you to do. He has put you in that situation. I see a lot of managers who hate being a manager. They prefer to get on with their day job. So really the only reason they're doing it is because it's progression. It's the only reason to do it. If you hate managing people, why would you manage them? Probably because you have to. But if you're being called and God has placed you in an organization as a manager, we should embrace that willingly, eagerly. It says in the passage, eagerly. We should eagerly want to be a manager. Therefore, we should try and do it to our best ability. Not like, oh, well, I've got my real job to do and then I've got the management part. Do it eagerly. Because that's what God has asked you to do. The second thing is power. Power is incredibly intoxicating. Power over people, finances, decisions. And power is one of the things that we have as managers. And the more senior you are in an organization, the more power you have. But the trouble is, power can corrupt. As Franklin D. Roosevelt said, and also it's actually one of the Spider-Man films, it says, with great power comes great responsibility. It was originally Roosevelt who said it. And that's true, because actually we get given power and we have responsibility. It says in the passage that don't lord it over those in your charge. Be examples to the flock, verse 3. Do not abuse your position. This is a stark warning to a lot of us. We shouldn't abuse power. We shouldn't say to people, I want you to do as I say and not as I do. We need to be a witness in how we use our power at work. And I've met a few who wield it very, very badly. We need to be a witness. And sometimes we can choose to set Sometimes power can set us apart from the people that we work for. One of my big bugbears in organizations, and it doesn't matter where I go, it's one of my big bugbears, is how sometimes when you're a manager, and the more senior manager you are, actually what happens is you get set apart. And one of my big problems is car parking spaces. In lots of organizations, depending on how senior you are, depends on where you park. If you're really senior, you may even have your job title written on the floor as you drive in or on a little thing. And what that says is, actually, this is power I have. My position in the car park, because actually you are just somebody who works for me and you may have to park down the back somewhere. Or I worked for one organisation where actually you had to park in a different car park and then walk. Things like that actually set managers apart. And I'm very thankful that the world of work nowadays, some of that is going. Because I think it's really destructive. But as Christian managers, we need to make sure we are not set apart from the people that we work for. That we can relate to them. We don't use power badly. So what does this look like for us practically? I think the first thing is we need to be open, honest, and fair in everything we do. Open, honest, and fair. That the scripture is telling us that we need to be open in our relationships, open in our dealings, honest about things, and fair. So we don't have favorites, and we don't wield power, and we're not doing it for the wrong motives. We're doing it because actually God has placed us in that position. Second one is, don't abuse your position. It's one of the big downfalls. When people get into management positions, they abuse their positions. And as a Christian, we have to say no. I was a manager. I've been a manager number of organisations, and probably the biggest team I managed was probably about 12. And there is nothing that I would ask them to do that I wouldn't do myself. Nothing. Because that's the point. And some of the jobs are really horrible. But the thing is, don't abuse your power. Don't abuse your position. Third thing I want to leave you with is, actually, as we are managers, we're there to please God, not please people. Which may be a conflict for us sometimes with the organisation that we work for. Because sometimes an organisation asks us to do things as a manager which we're not comfortable with. And at that point, you have to come back to it and say, actually, who am I pleasing here? God or people? And if the answer is people, then you have to seriously think about where you stand and what you will do. If, as a manager, you're being asked to push the ethical boundaries so far, you feel uncomfortable and you feel this is not something that God wants me to do, to behave like this, then you may have to take a radical step and say, I'm out. We need to please God in everything we do. We're not there to be our favourite manager or be favourite with people around us. We are there to please God. We're there to be a witness. And that's my final point. Just like the staff we talked about last week, just like employees, we need to recognise that we are a key witness for Christ. The more senior you are, the more you're a witness for Christ. Because they will look at what you do, they will look at what you say, and they will look at what your decisions are, and they will say, like somebody said to Mark, and I thought you were a Christian. And actually, we have to talk of Jesus, we have to demonstrate Jesus in the way that we treat people and the way that we manage. I think we need, there's a golden rule of management which says management is everything you do, manage other people in the way you would like to be managed. And that's a standard rule that you have, manage people in the way you'd like to be managed. I think the Christian manager's view is this, manage people in the way that shows them Jesus in all that you do and all that you say. And for us as managers, that's a huge challenge. What I want to do now is, for about 5 minutes, is I'd like you, where you're sitting in your tables, I'd like you to pray for those of any people who we're sitting with, who are managers, who are leaders in any form, shape, or form. Whether you run a business, whether you manage one person, and I'd love you to ask them a little bit about it and pray for them. Or if you work for a voluntary organisation and you're in a leadership role there, or in church and you're in a leadership role there. And I'd love us to pray for the people who actually we lead. If you're in a group and there's nobody who actually leads anybody or manages anybody, then pray for Christian managers at work. Pray for Christian managers that actually we would be able to stand up for Christ in the place that he's put us. So in your groups, 5 minutes, have a pray. And pray for the people in your groups, okay? So break down into smaller groups.